And we'll go ahead and begin with prayer. Our Father, we are thankful again for this day that you gave us and ask a great blessing on all of your people. Thank you for the blood of Jesus Christ, your only begotten Son, that has cleansed us from our sins and has given us hope for eternity. And Father, I just ask tonight that your word would go forth in this place and that those who hear it would love it and respond to it. Amen. All right, let's go ahead and read chapter 6. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. A man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul of all that he desireth, yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof, but a stranger eateth it. This is vanity, and it is an evil disease. If a man beget 100 children and live many years, so that the days of his years be many, and his soul be not filled with good, and also that he have no burial, I say that an untimely birth is better than he. For he cometh in with vanity and departeth in darkness, and his name shall be covered with darkness. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun nor known anything. This hath more rest than the other. Yea, though he live 1,000 years twice told, yet hath he seen no good. Do not all go to one place? All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. For what hath the wise more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. That which hath been is named already, and it is known that it is man. Neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. Seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? For who knoweth what is good for man in his life, all the days of his vain life, which he spendeth as a shadow? For who can tell a man what shall be after him under the sun? Now, as I said last week, chapter 6 and chapter 5 were basically the same subject throughout the two chapters. We're talking about man's relationship to the things that we work for on this earth. We can call it money if we want, or we can call it food if we want, or we can call it our living. But basically, the subject of these two chapters is man's relationship to the things that we get when we work. And I wasn't planning to go into any great detail on this chapter 6 because it is so much like chapter 5. I didn't want to cover everything double. However, it's now been 2 weeks since we went through chapter 5, and I'm afraid we all forgot it already. So I'm just going to pretend we didn't even go through chapter 5 yet tonight. I'm just going to give you guys another poke in the arm. You guys, I should say. I'm going to give myself one. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. Solomon asked God for wisdom. And God told Solomon that he was giving him wisdom above all that had been before him. He was going to make him the wisest king ever. And that Solomon wrote many proverbs, of which we have many of them at least written in the Word of God. And one of the things that Solomon said in the Word, in the Proverbs, one of the things that Solomon wrote, wisdom crieth without. She uttereth her voice in the streets. Solomon asked God for wisdom. We were told in James that we can ask God for wisdom. But even if a man is too stubborn to seek anything from God, if he opens his eyes and looks around him, you will get some wisdom because it is all around you. As you go through life and you look at the way things are working, it will help to make you a wise person if you think about it. Now, Solomon did not say in this verse, there's an evil that God told me about under the sun. He said, there is an evil which I have seen. That's a good point to understand here, because what Solomon is writing about in the book of Ecclesiastes is mostly life through the eyes of a man. He's mostly talking about earth as a human being sees it. Then throughout the book, he interjects here and there a little bit of the truth as we know it from God. So that's why the book gets so depressing sometimes. It would appear when you're reading through here like there's no answer to these problems, when in fact there is an absolute answer to all of these problems. But looking at things from a human standpoint, the standpoint of time, the standpoint of what we get out of this life, life isn't worth anything. And that's what he says over and over and over and over again through the book. It's vanity. It's empty. There's nothing there. But as we bring in God into the picture, then we find out that there actually is something here. Because this life that is a vain, vanity-filled life is something that God gave to us. And in order to please God, we take what God gave to us with its joys and its sorrows, and we give back to God our worship, our praise, and the fear that His name deserves. And so we find that again, as I've said many times as we go through this, we find that fear in the end of the book when he says the conclusion of the whole matter is to fear God and keep His commandments. So, right now, what Solomon is talking about right here is something that he saw when he was looking around. I have seen, there's an evil which I have seen under the sun, and it is common among men. Now, if this evil that Solomon has seen is common among men, you guys have seen it too. Okay? If you were watching, you've seen it too. This is what he saw. A man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul of all that he desireth, yet God giveth him not power to eat thereof. It happens over and over and over and over and over again in life. People, we think that there is a certain amount of this life that we need to have to make us happy. We think that there's a certain amount of this life that we need to have to keep us safe. A certain amount of this life that we need to preserve our interests. We need a certain amount of education to get us in a good place so that we can earn more of that good money to get us more of these good things. And over and over and over and over again, we watch the news come through. Somebody who had everything that there was, they up and die. They had insurance. They probably many of them didn't need insurance because their wealth was great enough to have paid for the most expensive doctors on the planet. But they die. And they leave behind them those very things that we think of as the necessities of life. And Solomon looks at this thing and he says, this is vanity. If I can get to the point where I can rise above my fellows, if I can work harder than them, or if I can steal more than them, or if I can do something to get more than my friends have so that I set myself in a position above them, and I have absolutely no certainty of holding on to what I have today, tomorrow. If I have no certainty that tomorrow I can keep it, what value does it have? You think back to the children of Israel. Their lessons that they went through of walking by faith. Every morning, when they got up in the morning, there was manna on the ground. And for 40 years in the wilderness, God gave them that manna. For 40 years, that was what they put in their mouth. For 40 years, that sustained their lives. But God did not give them the ability to collect anything more than they could put in their mouth for the day. Just for the day. And anybody who decided that they were going to gather themselves together a little bit of wealth and went out and took more than they could eat that day and gathered it together, the next day it was a liability to the camp. The next day it wasn't just ruined so they couldn't eat it. It had worms and it stank. It was, if... That's a good one. Can you imagine working today to gain something for tomorrow that all it did for you tomorrow was cause you more work instead of actually blessing you? Now, if you were in that situation, how many of you would collect manna for 2 days at a time? You might try it once. But you might say that was a coincidence. You might try it twice. If you're super, super stubborn like Brandon, you might try it 7 times. But after a little while, you would figure out that it doesn't keep overnight. And you'd quit. But we do this. We do this with this life. When we gather together something that God says and we know for a fact, without God saying it, we know for a fact that we are going to leave it behind. We cannot take it with us. And we still think that we need it. I like reading through the scriptures and reading about the widow who trusts in God. We don't believe in that today. We don't believe in that. We don't believe that it is right for anybody to trust in God today. We believe today that if you do not have money in the bank or promised to you from the government for your retirement, you are a fool. We believe that we have to provide for our old age ourselves. They didn't do that. They didn't do that back in Bible times. Back in Bible times, at least in God's, with God's people, God told them that the children were supposed to take care of their parents. That's what God said. He didn't tell the parents that they needed to be prepared for the future. He told the children to take care of them. He told them, in fact, to take care of the fatherless. He told them to take care of the widow. Whoever it was that needed their help, they were supposed to take care of. And we have Christians today who have so departed from God's will, we have so adopted what the world believes, that we can amass to ourselves $1 million and we put it in the bank for our retirement and we say, in all the stinginess of our soul, we very carefully spend every dime because when I die. Have no idea when I'm going to die. When I die, I need something to leave behind. We don't say that. That's a joke. We don't say that. We say I'm going to use that. But you know what? We don't use it. Because many, many, many people look at that stash of stuff that they have and they know that there's extra there and they're still utterly stingy with it. They're stingy. They don't do anything for God with it. They don't help anybody. They're stingy. They sit. They spend money cheaply. And we look at all these things and we still believe that there is something worth gathering together for ourselves. We still believe it. In spite of the fact that there is no guarantee that what we have right now we can keep tomorrow. For one, there's two ways of losing it. We can have it completely ripped out from our hands, or we can be taken from the earth and leave it behind for somebody else. Now, if it was certain that the things that we gathered together, we either could take with us and they would profit us in wherever we went, or if it was certain that the things that we gathered together would be worth something to us forever, that we weren't going to lose them, then I would say, go gather together as much as you can possibly get. Don't waste any time doing anything. Get yourself as much as you can. Because there's always tomorrow. But Ecclesiastes tells us there isn't tomorrow. But he goes on after he looks at these wealthy people who die when they're 25 years old and leave all of their stuff behind. He goes beyond that and he says, let's suppose a different scenario. Verse 3. If a man beget 100 children and live for many years, so that the days of his years be many, and his soul be not filled with good, and also that he have no burial, I say that an untimely birth is better than he. It is true that if we gather together everything that this world has to give us and die, we'll leave it behind. But it is also true that if we gather everything together that this world gives us and live for many years and don't die, that those things will not have no guarantee of providing us 1 minute of happiness. They have no guarantee that there will be any joy in our lives because we had them. And so here Solomon looks at that person. And he says, he doesn't say that if a man lives 100 years, or if a man begets 100 children and lives many years, that he will not enjoy the things that he uses. He doesn't say that. But he says if a man does this and doesn't find any good for his soul, it would be better off if he was born early and never lived. Because the one who's born early, it says in verse 4, he comes in with vanity and departeth in darkness, and his name shall be covered in darkness. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun, nor known anything. This hath more rest than the other. If a baby comes when it's only 4 months along, and that baby is just taken straight to the grave, that baby, Solomon says, is much better off than the person who had 100 children and lived for many years. Because that baby is at rest. However, as we have been going through the book here and reading, Solomon tells us numerous times as we go through that there is some joy to be had There is some good to be had out of the things of this life if they are used according to God's will and according to God's purposes. So we don't have to be like the man who has 100 children. That sounds fun to most of you, doesn't it? 100 children? You guys all want to do that? We don't have to be like that man who lives 100 years, or has 100 children, lives many years, and finds no good in life. Because if we understand God's purposes, we can live with a heart that is toward people instead of things. And when we love people, there is reward in life. There is a reward in living. But let's suppose that we can look at that man, and let's put him in a comparison to how we always think. When we're young, we look out at life and we say, when I'm a teenager, I'm going to be happy. This stinks, being at home and having my older sisters and older brothers going out with their friends and being able to go to their friends' birthday parties, and they can go out and get jobs, and they can go out and do this, and they can go out and do that. And here I am sitting at home, and I have to help Mom do the cooking, and I have to help Mom do the dishes. And you hear kids complain like this all the time. When I'm a teenager, things will be better. And the teenager is running around doing their little things, working hard, going to school, and having their little bits of fun, and says, when I'm 18, things are going to be better. When I'm 18 and I don't have my mom's rules, when my dad isn't breathing down my neck, and when I can move out on my own and find out that life is very, very expensive, when I can move out on my own and find out that I can't really make it, I'm going to be happy then. Then I can do what I want. Then I don't have to do the dishes. Then I don't have to come home when I want to come home. Then I can pick my own friends. And when that 18-year-old gets out there and finds out that life is pretty tough, they may begin to get just a hair of sense about how life works. And they say, when I can get through college, so I can get a job that pays me better, because this doesn't work. This kind of a life doesn't work. And so they look forward to those days when they can have gone through college and get a job that pays them better. And then they do. They get out of there. They choose in college some other fool just like themselves to get married to. Some other fool who has not acknowledged God. Some other fool who doesn't know how life works because they wouldn't read the book of Ecclesiastes. And they get married. Both get good jobs. And they plan out their family. And they're going to have these good kids. And everything's going to be perfect. But nothing is ever perfect. And after going through years of raising two little dirty brats, they start thinking about the days when the kids are moved away from home and they can retire. Those will be the good years. And then they get into their 60s. And they retire not because they got to the correct age, but because they were having a hard time working anymore. Because life was rough. Because the devil said to them that smoking was a good thing, and the devil said to them that drinking was a good thing, and the devil said to them that all the pleasures that he had strewn out across their path were good things, and they had beat themselves up listening to the devil, and their health was gone, and they retired sick. We're not talking right now to these people who are 88 years old. We're talking right now to people who are still 13. And we're looking at a man who's gotten 100 children, and he's lived many years, he's gone through all of that, but never found any fun. And we're going now to go, we're going to go one step further. Say, children, did you see that man that lived into his 80s, had 100 children, worked hard, got all sorts of stuff? Did you see that man, and did you see him that he never seemed to find the spot in life that made him happy? Let's just stop for a minute to think about that man. Maybe he needs to live longer. And so Solomon says, yea, though he live 1,000 years twice told. Let's take this man who only lived to be 88 years old and who didn't find the way to be happy yet. Let's take the man who didn't find that life had anything to offer to him, and let's offer him 2,000 years worth of living. And it says, yet hath he seen no good. Do not all go to one place. You know, if you give a man 2,000 years worth of life, and this life, the things that this world can offer, are the only thing he's going to get out of it, an untimely birth where you never saw the sun is a better choice. It isn't worth anything. Now he says, all the labor of man is for his appetite. All the labor of man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. Now I want to tell you something about this man, this fictitious man who is living 2,000 years. There were some real men who lived 1,000 years. Back in the beginning of the creation, that was reality. Nobody ever got to try it for 2,000. But the one thing that we have to look at about life, as you grow, there are some things that don't change. As the years come and the years go, there's some things that remain the same. And one of the things that remains the same, that will always remain the same, if you're just 1 year old, if you live to be 88, or if you could live for 2,000 years, the thing that will remain the same is every day is a day for food. Every day your tummy wants something to eat. Every day. All the labor of man is for his mouth. This is the one thing that when God created man and put him on the earth, this is the one thing that he gave to him. It was the only thing. He didn't give us houses. He didn't even give him clothes. He didn't give him airplanes. He didn't give him amusement parks. He didn't give him movies. He didn't give him computers. He didn't give him money. He didn't give him anything. He gave him one thing. He gave him food. That was it. That's the one thing that we will never, ever cease to need. The eternal appetite for food. Now, listen to verse 8 once, as we continue this idea. He says, for what hath the wise more than the fool? Now, I want you to imagine for a minute that we can live eternally on this earth. Whatever age you want to get to be, it doesn't matter. You can live here forever if you want. But one of you is going to get very wealthy, and one of you is going to stay very poor. Now, if this man who is very wealthy were to go one day into a big grocery store and tell the owner of the store, can I back my semi-truck up to the back door? Because I would like to buy everything on your shelves. I have built myself a pantry on my house with refrigeration and with freezers and with shelves that is big enough. My pantry is as big as your store. And I would like everything that you have here. I'm going to load this into my truck and I'm going to go home with it. I have gained money. I am wealthy. When I buy everything off of your shelves, I'm going to leave billions of dollars in the bank. I want you to imagine this other guy over here. And he gets his paycheck. And he goes to the bank and he cashes his paycheck. And he goes to the store and he very sparingly fills a shopping cart with the things that he needs to get him through until his next paycheck. That's all the money he's got. Now I want you to follow these two people for 1 week. And you know what happens to them? They both do exactly the same thing. This man eats 3 meals a day. At the end of the week, his house is empty. He needs more food. This man eats 3 meals a day. At the end of the week, he's got lots of food. Who gained? Who was better there? The man who bought an entire grocery store worth of food couldn't use any more of it than what his appetite dictated. There was nothing more he could do with that food than eat the limited amount that his body was meant to process that week. Why? What hath the wise more than the fool? What was it worth getting that extra stuff for? If there was only so much you could do with it. Let's talk about some other things. Let's suppose that you are a wealthy person and you have a house, very nice house, in your town where you live. But in another place where you go frequently, you also buy yourself a nice house. And way up in the woods, in a retreat area, you buy yourself a cabin. And out on the beach, 1,000 miles away, you buy yourself another home. And then there's another guy that he just has one house. Now this guy who has just one house, he can only live in that one house. And this other guy who has 5 houses, he can only live in one house at a time. And while he lives in one of his houses, the other 4 sit empty. What did he gain over the man who had one house? If you were big enough to cut yourself in half, you could live in 2 houses at once. But you're not. You can only live in one house at a time. Suppose that you are a wealthy person and you buy yourself an amazing number of vehicles. I know a guy who collected the big cars from the 70s and 80s. And he had a garage full of them. I believe it was 40. I was working for a construction company and we were building for him, building his house. He had 40 cars. I didn't get to see them. I heard his story. But you know, the fact of the matter is, he only had 2 hands and he only had 2 feet. And he only had 1 body and he could only drive 1 car at a time. Now if he had 40 cars and he was in one of them cruising down the road, what good were the other 39 to him? And if some other guy in town had 1 car and he was cruising down the road in his car, the same time the rich man was cruising down the road in one of his cars, who had it better? What did the rich man have that was better than the poor man? Now suppose that the rich man had lots of money in the bank and the poor man had only a little bit. But the poor man paid all of his bills. Once the rich man had paid all of his bills, what value did that extra money in the bank have for him? Oh, I suppose somebody is not believing me. Somebody doesn't believe what I'm saying. Because you know, the difference between the rich man and the poor man is that the poor man has a limitation for the fun that he can have. Because the poor man, when he's done with his work and he eats his meal, he's going to sit down on his couch in his home and he's going to do something for the night. And the rich man is going to go and he's going to get into his pickup and he's going to hook up his trailer and he's going to get his snowmobiles out and he is going to go out for the night. And the poor man can't have that. But I have a question here. At the end of the night, when the rich man pulls into his house drunk to park his snowmobiles for the night, and the poor man spent his night with his little girl playing on the floor, which one of them enjoyed the evening more? Because you know, there is only so much time in a day. Yes, Noah. If they were both the same state of heart, they were probably about equal in enjoyment. There's only so many hours in a day. The rich man can go buy every toy that the world has to offer, but he can only use so much of it because he only has so many hours in his life. And if the poor man had but one toy to play with, and it was something that gave him some happiness, he really wasn't behind the rich man who had 10, because the rich man could only play with one at a time. Let me tell you the truth here now. Because we are defiled creatures, and because we have a great desire and because our wants extend all over the place, the rich man likely did find a bit more, just a bit more enjoyment in his many things than the poor man found in his few. If both were just there to service themselves and live for themselves, the rich man might have found a bit more fun. But if you want to walk with God, everything that the rich man owned will stand between you and the joy that God has offered to his people if you do his will. And the poor man's stuff will not. If you want to walk with God and you want to serve him, you can find happiness in being the man without all the stuff. And you cannot find happiness in being the man with all the stuff, with this one exception only. If the man with all the stuff was not buying those things for pleasure, but rather was doing something for the service of God. We have to be very careful when we talk about people and money. We are not talking about people who have lots of things. We are talking about people who live a certain way. You can take the life of R.G. Letourneau, and he was wealthier than everybody in this church plus all of our friends put together. And he did not seek for his pleasure in the things that he owned. He sought for his pleasure in the service of God. And he used everything that he did for God. And he took the money that God gave him and he sent it away to other people. And he lived like us. We're not calling a man like R.G. Letourneau a rich man, even though he, in today's money, would have been a multi-billionaire. That's not what a rich man is. A rich man is somebody who is heaping together the things of this life for himself against the Word of God. There's a reason sometimes to have more than one car. There's a reason to have perhaps more than one house. There is a reason sometimes to have things, but don't ever dream that those things are going to be your happiness, because those things can never provide you any joy. So the labor of man is for his mouth, yet the appetite is not filled. As we go through life, gathering the things together for ourselves that we're going to use. We only get to use the same amount, and yet, if we live 2,000 years, we still want food. There is no end to our desire for food. So in verse 9, he says, better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. It's better to find our happiness in something that we own than to think about happiness in something that we don't have. Now, I'm telling you, some of these verses in this chapter do get kind of confusing, and I'm not even honestly sure where he is going with his thoughts in some of these verses. So I'm going to have to kind of sparingly skip over the last few verses here. That which hath been is named already, and is known that it is man. Neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. Then verse 11, seeing there be many things that increase vanity, what is man the better? This one we can understand, but we can't really, because the thought is so deep. If you stop and think about what Solomon actually said there, if you take the number, which is not a number, zero, you can multiply it by any number that you want to. And we all know, because we've done our math, that the number, your answer, is zero. If we can take vanity, which is nothing, if we can take vanity, which is emptiness, if we can take something that is worthless, and we can multiply it, technically we should have nothing. But Solomon says we can increase our zero. Somehow we can take this vanity that we have on this earth, and we can increase it so that we have more vanity. Now I think in real life, we can understand what he's saying here. Though in theory, it shouldn't even be possible. In real life, the things that we gather together that are actual things, but that aren't worth anything, we can increase these things. And what does it do for us when we increase these things? It just increases our zeros. That's all. It doesn't add anything to us. Who knoweth what is good for a man in this life, all the days of his vain life, which he spendeth as a shadow? Who knows? Solomon is asking this question as we go through the book over and over and over again. What is good for man? He's trying different things. He's looking at different things. He's attempting different things. And he's trying to find somebody with an answer. Who has the answer for this empty life? We know who has the answer. We know who has the answer. The Creator of life has the answer. And the Creator of life is giving us the answer in this book. As we go through, mostly we are learning about in this book what is not the answer. But then the very next verse, he says, a good name is better than precious ointment. And so we begin in the next numerous chapters here, we begin to find out not some of the things that are not the answer, but some of the things that are better, let's say. Let's say we will look through a discussion of if this isn't the answer, this is a better choice. However, many of the better things that Solomon goes through here aren't the answer either. Because the answer is found in one very extremely simple thing that every person can have. Fear God and keep His commandments. That's the answer.